Welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content and word pronunciation is simply the opinion of the hosts and their guests.
We're all like guns, and I love being free. Because I'm armed, you can't take that from me, and you should know it.
Hi, and welcome to New Shooter Canada, episode 160. Tonight, with us, we have Thomas.
Hello, just turning up my microphone here.
Mike.
Hello. My microphone's already set.
And me, Benny. And my microphone is a headset, so yes, that
too. I had to cough, so I turned it down.
I just used the mute button.
Well, mute works for the Skype call. It doesn't work for the Audacity call, and Mike gets mad because he has to edit all my coughs. So I'm going to just mute Mike and cough now, and that way he won't hear it.
Okay. So Thomas, what are you doing with guns this week?
My biggest thing... I had a prohibited brain fart. I mean, it was so bad. We had a list. Like, Benny and I have been looking for blanks to do the muzzle brake flash test. So, Benny did make some, but my concern was that the crimp wasn't going to be enough to give us the sufficient flash that we wanted to get on film. So, we actually had a very generous listener message us and said, "Hey, I've got some military blanks. Would you like to have them?" Great. So I met up with him and he handed me this package and figured, oh, it feels like 5 or 6 boxes in here. So I spent 20 minutes talking to him, and this was kind of late in the evening. So when I got home, I pulled them out and they're all attached by metal clips. I thought, oh, this is really cool. So I laid it out, took a picture of it, put it on Facebook. I went to bed. In the morning, I turned on Facebook and there's lots of buzz and activity on that post. And we were gently reminded by Brian Bolivar that the picture of those clips, that the belt that was on, was a prohibited device. And I knew it. I knew it was. I forgot all about it. When we were doing the charity shoot, Kevin Latham was saying how Ryan from SFRC was having a hard time finding belts for the bar rifle that we're using. And because of its classification, you can only use web belting that was made prior to 1945. Anything else is limited to 5 rounds. And I had like this 90 round clip of .223. And I'm reading this just as I'm waking up and I go, oh my God. And I brain farted. I forgot all about it. I knew about the regs, but how often do I look at the machine gun regulations? But I knew it was there. So panic mode. I grab my coffee, grab my cigarettes. I go out in the garage and I spent 90 minutes ripping that thing apart. I had blisters upon blisters getting that thing apart. So now we have a nice box of .223 and a small clip with 4 rounds. So with the empty one, it's 5 and we're legal. I can't believe. I knew it, and I just blanked on it. So
that makes no sense whatsoever.
I know, but that's the regulation. So
no,
thank you.
No arguing with complying with the law. That was not my statement. It's just it makes no sense.
Well, thank you to Brian for pointing it out. And he was just being sincere. Look, you can get into a lot of trouble. Like, oh man, thanks a lot. So shout out to Brian, and I took the post down. And I took the listener's name off too, because he had no idea either. I said, you realize that, and I told him, he goes, oh man, I had no idea. I said, I did, but I forgot. So, it's good that we have, listeners and followers that know the law very well. So thanks to those guys. What else did they do? Another good thing about me being semi-retired is now I can go to our club shoot nights. Our club shoot night is normally Wednesday, and I've worked every Wednesday for the last 12, 13 years. So we had to go get our new keys. So I went up and I brought up the X-Trim and the Q100 again. And I just wanted to see, because I had no problems with the Q100 or the X-Trim once I did the modifications to the hammer. So I wanted to do a few different manufacturers to see how it would work. And no problem. I put 500 or 600 rounds through it, and it fires beautifully. So I was really happy with that. And I decided on the 3.8 load for the Q100 for PPC. It shot it really, really well. And
so it broke through cardboard.
It's almost full power. It's just got the maximum on that's 4.1. So it's not that low. I did make some softer ones. So I did go down to 3.1, but just to do some tests, because when I was there was four other members shooting. So three of them The young lady and the two guys were experienced bullseye shooters. So, you know, they're shooting one-handed and they've got their bullseye guns. And another lady, Heather. Heather shoots the Action Pistol League outside with us, which is, it's an IPSC type of league. And I was, you know, I've already finished shooting. I just walked down the line just to see what people were shooting. So, you know, the one girl had a really nice sighting red mounted on her buck mark, and I like that. And one guy had a really nice Smith & Wesson 32 Smith & Wesson long revolver. So, you know, I'm just looking what they have. And Heather had a Shadow SP1. So, and she has shot Action Pistol with us. And I know she picked up her Smith & Wesson M&P Tactical. So, you know, she's really getting into competing, which is great. But, you know, went on to look at the targets. And I'm looking at her targets, and she's all over the place. Because normally when we do Action Pistol, it's, you know, 10 yards, most 15. And usually she's on target. But at 23 yards, she was really having a hard time keeping all her shots on paper. So, I walked up to her, and I just, looking at the gun, and I said, you know, mind if I dry fire it and check the trigger? And trigger seemed nice, and the sight seemed nice. So I said, you know, are you focusing on the front sight, or are you focusing on the target? And of course, she was focusing more on the targets. Her sight was going a little bit blurry. So then I brought over, I said, well, why don't you try my gun? And I brought over my Q100, and I let her shoot that with her loads. She's using, they're poly-coated. She bought a bulk, 1,000 rounds bulk. And she shot a lot better with my Q100, but she was still almost all of them were to the left, and she had said more on paper, but they're all centered to the left. So I said, oh. So I said, try my 22. So I put her on the K22X trim, and she had 8 out of 10 shots in the black and a couple right dead center. And I corrected her grip, because the way she had her grip, she had this great big void in it. And I just turned to her, I said, you're flinching. She goes, no, I'm not. She goes, I said, yeah, you're flinching. I said, you shot my gun a lot better than you shot your own, because you know when your gun's going to break. I said, my gun, nobody's ever told her about the reset. So when I taught her about the reset with my gun, she shot a little bit better. But on the 22, there was no flinch, and her grouping was really, really tight. So I said, you know what, I'm going to come up there on Sunday, and I'm going to be testing some more loads. Come up, I'll make some really soft shooting loads, and I'm telling you, it's you're flinching about it. So hopefully I have the time tomorrow. I'll go up to the range and I'll get her to shoot some of the softer loads and see if I can just get rid of that flinch a little bit, and then work her back up to her full power loads. Cause you know, it's getting a flinch with a 9mm is not a good thing.
No. But go ahead.
Well, she does really well in the Action Pistol. Like, you know, everything else is great. Like she's fast out of the holster. She moves between stages. You know, she does. But, you know, when it comes to the steel, because it's about 15 yards, she has a hard time hitting the steel. And I think she actually is flinching when she's pulling the trigger. And her CZ is a lot heavier than my Q100. So she is not going to have, you'd think it would soak up some of the recoil. I think with the rotating barrel, it was easier for her because she wasn't getting the flip, having it jump up and having it come straight back. So tomorrow I'm going to bring the X-Cal, and I'm going to bring some softer loads, and hopefully we can get rid of that flinch for her.
Great.
I'm just glad that we've got a lot of women competing in the league. So that's just great to see. So, you know, I want to get her on target when we're getting, you know, really good, so she can kick my ass one day. What about you, Mike? What'd you do with guns this week?
Got out and got a little bit more hunting in, but no luck. I think I'm pretty much done for the year.
Outside how much time's left in the season?
Tomorrow.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if I had a muzzleloader or a bow or a crossbow, then I could extend it a lot more. But I realized when I was out shooting last weekend, you know what? I'm more of a shooter and less of a hunter.
Well, that's why my friend Peter messaged me today and asked me if I had a muzzleloader. Yeah. Season ends tomorrow. Okay.
Yeah, I have other friends who have in the past, they're like, oh, didn't get a deer, got to go get a crossbow now. Because if you get a crossbow, your season goes right from, like, I can't remember when, I think it starts in September, and it goes almost all the way to the new, to the new year.
Yeah.
Like, so it's a huge season if you're willing to get out there and hunt. My problem is how often am I actually going to get out there? Is it worth me spending that much money on a bow, at least at this point? I am hoping that over the course of this year, I will get a bow, go take archery lessons, because that's the other part of it, is I have no real experience with a bow besides, you know, just playing around. And I'm not going to shoot at a deer with that, I'm going to say, air quote, level of experience. So I figure I'll take courses and stuff like that, and hopefully next year I'll get out there with a bow and do a little bit more bow hunting. Realistically, the biggest appeal to me is I get to go hunting in September, not November. So, yep. Outside of that, I played with practice score. So we have a match coming up in a week. And I'm trying to get my club to move towards using practice score and tablets. So the club already does have tablets, but I think IPSC is the only group that's actually using it. The IDPA club, the I-Corps, and the three-gun group, I think none of them are using the tablet. So I'm trying to push the club to get more people to use the practice score. And for me to do that, I need to know how to run it. So I'm going to be running my first match with using practice score. So we'll see how that goes. I got a shot timer. I ordered, which one did they order? The Pocket Pro 2. It's a big blue one. I haven't had any shooting experiences with it yet, but I was playing with it. It's nice. The display is nice and big, so it's good. And then I got
my... How much do those things run? Because, from what I understand, they're kind of expensive.
Somewhere in the ballpark of $170 pre-tax.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That is expensive.
Yeah, they're not cheap.
Yeah, even the cheapest one, the Are You Ready timer, it's still $120.
Yeah, it's... For to me, it wasn't much, like the price difference wasn't enough to go with the cheaper option. I figured I'd just get this one, buy once, cry once kind of idea. And I've always been using my, I downloaded for free a shot timer app on my phone. And did it work? Yeah, kind of. It worked better for like dry fire, for just getting a random beep, essentially. But when it came to actually trying to use it at the range, like, you know, if it was windy, the wind would blow over the microphone, and since it would pick up ghost shots. So your time was like, okay, I took six shots. If there's six shots on the clock, then I know I'm good. But if there's anything more than that, I have no idea if it's me or if it's the wind blowing or someone shooting a gun a few bays over. Like, it just wasn't a very reliable way of timing. So I decided that if I want to get more serious about this, I needed a real shot timer.
Yeah, I have one on my phone. I don't think I've ever actually used it with shooting, and it wasn't sensitive enough for dry fire.
Yeah, I've used it. I used the Par Timer app for dry firing, which works fine for dry fire because you don't need it to pick up on like the clicks. It's good enough for, like, you know, you get a beep, you draw, you pull out the gun, you try and essentially take a shot before the second beep. But
I can't use my timer in the house.
No? Oh, the dog? No.
The dog starts howling, and the wife starts yelling, and it's just not worth it.
I can understand that. Yep.
Because so. I can't hear. I'm in the basement. I can't hear him going on. I was like, ah! But, yeah, apparently he doesn't like the timer.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, yeah, so that's pretty much it for that. And then I got the parts from Thomas from Matador Arms, so I will begin my recording and installing videos for that.
Ooh, you got installed the parts, take some pictures, and put our logo on it. So every time Canadian Patriot Podcast put their picture up, I can sneak one of ours in that post too.
All right, I'll get something together for you soon.
And what about you, Benny? What you doing guns this week?
This week, so not much. I reloaded 100 rounds of 223. Because I'm out of primers for my 9. So that's pretty much all I'm reloading these days. I've sort of gotten into a rhythm, so it's not as slow as it used to be. So I'm getting a little more comfortable with the single stage.
So is that 100 rounds completed then?
Yeah, that's 100 rounds completed. Plus, I have another 100 rounds primed and ready for powder and projectile.
Okay, that's so good.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I crimped all of my the ones that I've finished. So I think that's like 200 now, I think, that I've done. So those are all crimped and ready to go. So I wasn't crimping before. Not that I've shot anything yet. But I decided to use the crimping collet and went for it.
And how do you like that crimping collet?
I don't really know what I'm doing, so it's great.
You're not damaging the case, so I guess that's a positive.
Right. I just see like a little like indent on four sides. So we'll see what happens.
Okay.
I tumbled some shot shells for Hanukkah, which is coming up, because I don't know if the listeners remember my menorah last year. That's the 8-pronged candelabra that we use for Hanukkah.
When is that your place? Weren't you going to make it out of 223?
So I made it out of 308, but it has to burn for like, and I just filled the cases up with oil and then put a wick in. But they have to burn for a certain amount of time, and the amount of oil that fits in the 308 case is not enough. So I was going to use 12-gauge shells this year. But the screws I have currently are not long enough or even wide enough to replace the primer pocket for the shells. So I have to find new screws.
So no, you're not going to fill the shot shell with oil. You're going to put a little glass container or something in it?
No, I'm going to just fill it up with oil. Unless you have a better idea.
I would keep a fire extinguisher nearby because that's
yeah, it's plastic. Oh, no. The plastic,
Yeah, I know. So the way it works is you have the wick in the middle and then you use something like a bobby pin, or they actually make a little like tin. Think of like a tripod with a collar. And you pinch your wick inside that and use the rest of it to hold it in the middle of the shot shell. Because otherwise, yeah, it is a fire hazard and it's not a good idea.
Even the oil, because I've got little tiny oil lamps and wicks, and even the oil itself gets heated up enough where it could actually melt the plastic.
So I'll have to keep an eye out on that. Worst comes to worst, I can use your idea and just put glass in there. But even
the glass heats up so much that you can't even touch it. Why don't you get some 50 BMG shells?
That's what I was going to say. I think this is an excuse to get a 50.
I think William sells the brass for $5 a piece.
That's going to be expensive. I'm trying to do this on the cheap here. Otherwise, I would just buy a 30. Like I have, it works already, but I think it would look cool and nice. So
it would look cool. I'm just I don't want you to burning down the apartment and then MD killing you.
Oh no, it's fine. We gotta watch them anyway. It's all the kind of thing you just light and leave. You have to actually watch, like stick around kind of thing. So but I will definitely keep that in mind. Don't want any shot shells melting on me.
Yeah, I'm just thinking if you've got those, because the little glass vials I have for the oil, they're kind of wide, but if you insulate it, maybe some tin foil or some type of insulation around the glass. Now, if you had some 10 gauge, that'd give you a little more room.
Yeah.
But I don't know anybody who has 10 gauge.
No, or maybe I'll just use, like, I'll switch out and use 40 shells and then put glasses on top of that. But I don't know. I sort of like the 308. I don't think there's enough room on my candelabra for 50s. Nice little
stuff. Fine, 338 Lapua.
Well, if any listeners have any empty brass they want to send me.
I do. I actually have some 338 Lapua downstairs.
No, it's okay. Okay, fine, Thomas.
You can have it. It's somebody gave it to me. It's all reloads. I was just going to take it apart anyway. Because okay. I don't trust it. First of all, I don't have one, and I'd rather just take them apart because I wouldn't ever fire anybody's reloads like that.
How many do you have?
I have a box.
So is that like 20?
20, yeah.
Okay, so I only need 9 at the most. So, okay, we'll be in touch.
Okay, you'll just have to discharge the primers.
Oh, I have experience with that. I still have not taken out that primer from that 9, though.
I was just about to ask.
Because it's I like sort of put away my 9 my 9 dies, and with a single stage, you're constantly moving, like changing dies, right? So I just leave whichever dies I'm using, I leave it open on top of my pile of dies, and my pile of dies. I've got 2 sets. I've got 3 sets, but one of them is put away. because I don't have a 41 Magnum right now. So yeah, that's the situation. That's where I'm sitting right now. So well, eventually I'll deprime a bunch more nine that I've tumbled and I'll deprime them and I'll take that primer out and put it back in and finish that round. So we'll see.
Has MD actually got her license in the mail yet?
No. She sort of put that on hold for a bit because we got a lot going on because of the September holidays for Jewish stuff. That was a lot going on in around the house and everything, and then there was a lull where we had a bunch of other stuff going on. Then we had ordering stuff in for the business, and now we've got Christmas for you guys, Hanukkah for us, and then New Year. So there's a lot going on here. So we haven't gotten around to that yet.
You're gonna take her shooting if she does the dishes?
No, I gotta do the dishes.
Oh, so you gotta do this.
If I get some dishes done this week, then hopefully we'll go shooting. We'll shoot some rifles on Tuesday, but we'll see.
Oh, that's right. You're the manual dishwasher at home.
I'm one of them. There's two of us.
Yeah, I'm the only one. It's one of my jobs, the dishes. Thank God we have a dishwasher.
So yeah. MD is going to the range with you, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're not. Okay. I think we're gonna go to the farm.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Oh no, the way you have it written, I was like, wait a second, is she letting you go shooting, or is she coming with you to go shooting?
Oh yeah, no, she's coming with. It's been a long, long time since she shot a gun, so hopefully we'll get some rounds down range. So
yeah, I think the last few times we've taken her, she hasn't actually shot.
No, she was watching Zebby. So hopefully we'll get a babysitter, and we'll head out there and make some noise.
Sounds like a good date night.
Well, it's gonna be during the day, but yeah, it will be great. So yeah, Thomas, do you want to take story one, or if you want, I can take it.
No, I'll do it. Story one is from the Canadian Firearms Blog. More than 2 years after Bill C-42, known as the Common Sense Firearms Licensing Act, received royal assent and became law, the much-anticipated provision is finally coming into force on November 30th. The provision gives owners with expired licenses a grace period in which they can renew their license without fear of being treated as a criminal. Under current laws, any person who has an expired license can be charged with unauthorized possession of a firearm. Which actually was almost happened to my wife when she was in the hospital. A criminal offense that came up to 5 years in jail if convicted. The grace period would last 6 months, will treat a recently expired license simply as an administrative paperwork issue and not a legal one. And the good thing is if you got prohibited, you don't lose your status as you would currently if your license expired. The federal Liberal government, however, still intends to repeal certain provisions of C-42, something they have stated during their election platform prior to being elected. While they haven't indicated precisely which provisions would go and which would stay, they have repeated that on many occasions, a provision that would allow gun owners to transport restricted and prohibited firearms without a permit, a glaring, false, and misleading statement that is devoid of fact-based decision-making. They also claim that they would utilize the opposed previous government's emotion-based ban. So they want to get back the ATTs where we're still at the mercy of the CFO every time we want to do something. Let's hope it doesn't happen, but it's stupid. We finally get some common sense and then, oh, they might have their guns at coffee time or something.
Oh. No one goes to coffee time anymore.
Exactly.
I can't remember the last time I've even seen a coffee time.
I think there's one on Bathurst and Lawrence in the GTA. I'm not sure, though. I think that might be a Starbucks now.
Actually, Starbucks across the street, there's a coffee time on the south side because I spent many a lunch period there when I was doing the Bathurst bus.
Okay. New release from Public Safety Canada Propaganda Machine. Is that the CBC, Thomas?
No, actually the Public Safety Minister. I just threw in the propaganda machine. This is an official government release.
Great. November 17th, 2017. Communities across Canada are experiencing a devastating effect of gun violence and gun activity. Gun and gang violence is a complex issue that requires strong collaboration between all levels of government, law enforcement, and communities. As part of this commitment to make it harder for criminals to get and use handguns, and assault weapons, and to reduce gun and gang violence, the Government of Canada has announced up to $327.6 million over 5 years and $100 million annually thereafter in new funding to help support a variety of initiatives to reduce gun crime and criminal gang activities. The Government of Canada will also bring together experts, practitioners, frontline personnel, and decision makers for a summit on criminal guns and gangs in March 2018. The Criminal Guns and Gang Summit will be an unprecedented national summit on challenges, solutions, and best practices in the fight against gun crime and in combating the deadly effects of gangs and illegal guns in communities across Canada. The government hopes to hear from key stakeholders, including law enforcement agencies, provincial, territorial, and municipal governments, community and mental health organizations, Indigenous groups, governments, and non-government organizations.
Yet they don't want experts on the Farms Advisory Panel.
This is something completely different, Thomas. This is talking about illegal guns in the hands of criminals. How we can help that.
But they want experts there, but they won't allow experts on the Firearms Advisory Committee to actually know about firearms in Canada.
Well, Thomas, the only people that really have quote-unquote experts here are police officers who deal with illegal guns and criminals, which doesn't really help us because apparently we don't know where these things are coming from. Otherwise, we would say, hey, let's deal with that. But no, we're talking about, you know, gun violence, which, you know, that seems to ignore the fact that how many people die from stabbings or car attacks or any other weapon in Canada, no one seems to care. It's always gun violence.
Yeah, and it's taken them 2 years to put money into this.
This is the guns and gangs, remember? So it doesn't necessarily mean that all this money is going toward gun control. It could also be going towards preventative measures to prevent people from, I guess, joining gangs, things like that.
Right, no. I'm not. My issue was saying gun violence. They got to stop putting a qualifier in front of violence and just try and stop violence in general. As soon as you start qualifying it, you get an issue like Britain, where, you know, you have dump bins for your kitchen knife because stabbings have gone through the roof. So yeah, which apparently there still is gun crime there, but the amount of violent crime has skyrocketed. So it doesn't really help take guns off the street, people.
Yeah, there's no gun violence. There's just violence, and people use whatever tool necessary. And more people probably killed, just many people killed by knives and guns and cars and everything else. So it's feel good. It's not a bad idea having money going to the gang task force, but they put the guns and gangs task force. You know, they loop gun holders or gun owners in with the gangs by doing this. Gun violence, you know, assuming that anybody that owns a firearm is potentially violent. And that's their attitude, is that we're potentially violent people because we own guns.
In Canadian law, a firearm is always considered a weapon. We don't think of them that way. We think of them as tools, as sports activities. But according to the Criminal Act, there is no situation where, unlike a knife where it can be used as a tool, a firearm is always considered a weapon.
Yeah, Section 94 of the Criminal Code. That's one thing that happened with BLC 68. Is until that happened, firearms were not illegal in Canada. And once that kicked in, it specifies that a firearm is a weapon in the Criminal Code now, where it never used to be.
Yeah, we're just going to get some bureaucrat to like accidentally get rid of that part of the bill, and then be like, yeah. All the laws are in place. You gotta commit a crime with a firearm. You can't just, owning the firearm can't be the crime.
That's the problem. Everything else is based upon intent under the Criminal Code, except in C68, the actual possession of a firearm is a crime, unless you have that permission slip from the government. But, you know, that doesn't stop criminals from getting guns, because look at story three.
Mike, you want to take story three?
Sure. So this is from the CBC. Whitehorse RCMP stopped a man from boarding a plane to Vancouver early and arrested him for illegally carrying a gun. Police say 31-year-old,
Abdirizak Mohammed Sahal.
There you go.
Sahal.
Better than I would have pronounced it. Attempted to board the plane with an undeclared firearm in his checked luggage. Police say the weapon was not loaded. Sahal was taken into custody and charged with unauthorized possession of a firearm and tampering with a serial number on a firearm. He appeared in court on Wednesday afternoon and was remanded to custody until his next court appearance. So don't worry, people. Even though how he had unauthorized possession of this firearm, it was unloaded. So it's okay. We can forgive this man.
Well, it was in the checked luggage, so I'm not really sure what his intention was with it.
There's all kinds of rules there. Like, you cannot transport a firearm. You have to declare it when you transport a firearm on an airline.
Yeah.
He also had the serial number tampered with. So that means
5 years right there.
Yeah. So with that alone, even if he had a license and everything else, if he had tampering with a serial number, that kind of said to me right off the bat, this guy was not doing legal things.
He was not on the up and up.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. This was not just like, I forgot I was hunting and brought my rifle with me on this flight home. Like, no.
See, this sounds really silly, but like, what if he used that as his range bag, his suitcase?
And he forgot he had a rifle in it?
Well, do they classify what gun it is?
Oh, that's true. It could have been something smaller, like a handgun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just says undeclared firearm.
Yeah, so like, and this isn't like throwing, like, I'm not trying to pull him out from under the bus here, but I can totally accidentally forget like a box of ammo in my bag and bring it on a plane by accident. It'll look really guilty and awkward, and I'd probably get charged with something. But
like this is funny coming from the CBC. I'm surprised they're not saying that it was a deadly handgun or an assault firearm. Like, they have to put it in there a couple of times. They usually specify what the firearm is. It's a deadly weapon. They just said an undeclared firearm, which is unusual because usually they try to put every type of title on any firearm story.
You know, it'd be really funny if it turns out it was like a flintlock pistol or something.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Maybe it's something very like, you know, oh, it's a muzzle loader. Well, no, because then they would say it's a 50 cal.
Exactly. What was that last one they put on? It was an ATI Ruger assault rifle. Well, they just looked at the name of the stock. It was an ATI stock on a Ruger rifle. I think it was on a 10/22, but it was an evil ATI Ruger assault rifle.
Well,
and it was the police that gave it
modification
that.
Modification to make it go faster.
It was the OPP that actually gave him that name.
I'm just imagining, like, you know, we put a muffler on that car. Now it goes faster.
We put a couple rubber bands
on the
fast.
Isn't that how it works?
Oh, no,
I've been driving with a muffler on my car all these years for no good reason?
Sorry, not muffler. Flames. Flames. My mistake. We put flames on the side of the car. Yeah, now it goes faster.
Like a racing stripe.
You put just the right amount of holes in that muffler to get that mean sound. It goes faster.
Yep.
Trust me, my muffler had enough holes in it. It doesn't need any more.
Yeah, my flex hose went. My car's awfully noisy right now. Welcome to the new automotive sentence.
So, what's new in the industry, Thomas? Or not new?
I've been
in the
getting quite a few questions. People are asking me what's happening with the Grandpa introduced a 9mm carbine called the Streibog SR9A1. It's available in Europe.
So when are we getting it in Canada?
We might not. That's a problem. That's what everybody wants to know, when it's coming. Apparently, it's in a holding pattern, waiting for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives to sign off it. The fire control system that Grandpa shipped to them was the pistol version. That's the one that was submitted. It was also drilled for the full auto parts. So they approved the pistol contingent on getting a full auto sample model. You know, we kind of expect that the U.S. is going to ask or demand a revised version of the receiver for compliance reasons because, you know, you can't have an evil something that's channeled out for parts that you can't even get. We could get the guns in Canada right now, but we don't want to risk the chance of a recall and having to declare prohibited down the road. So until we get a compliant receiver, and we're not going to bother bringing them up into Canada because we just don't want people to go out and buy them and then have the same thing happen with the VZ, where it's legal and all of a sudden it's not legal. And then I doubt very much they would make it legal again. So just to, we don't want to take any chances. So you're going to have to wait. It could be another year. It all depends on what the actual, what they do in Slovakia right now. It is a cool rifle. It's a dual mass bolt, easy to assemble. You can do the cocking handle on either side without any tools. It's got a collapsible stock, muzzle brake. It's an aircraft grade upper and lower receiver with a Picanto rail on the upper and lower sides of the upper receiver, as well as key mod rails on both sides. You can put an AR pistol grip, and actually a lot of the internal parts can be replaced by AR type, AR parts. You can, the stock adapter, you can run an AR stock adapter on it if you want to do an aftermarket stock. So it looks really, really interesting. Plus it's got easy to reach manual safety, and it can be field stripped without any tools. As I said, we're looking at importing it, but we don't want to take the chance to bring it in the country just in case. So until we get something that's been deemed appropriate, we're not going to take a chance to bring it over the border.
So you're basically waiting for the ATF to come to a decision, and then based on that decision, you're going to
proceed. Yeah, I have a feeling the ATF is going to ask for a compliant, like say similar to the AR-15. We can't have one that was modified to even accept full auto parts.
Right.
No, like the 9mm carbines are really popular up here, like the JR carbine. And this thing's supposed to be selling for under 1,000 US.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
so,
wait, that's not so.
So, that, yeah, it'd be awesome. You're competing with the Aero Position and the JR carbine, and it would be nice. And I'm assuming, like the pictures I've seen, they've got the high capacity machine gun magazines. So, I'm assuming that standard capacity Grand Power magazines will fit.
Do you have a weight? It looks kind of bulky.
No, I don't have a weight on it. I haven't actually seen one.
Yeah, it looks the CZ Bren, I think it's called.
Yeah, it does look a little similar to that. It looks cool, but I've had probably a dozen people ask me about it, and I've spoke to my boss, and he's not risking it. And I don't blame him. Who'd want to take the chance?
Oh.
So, say, just if you get... bring 100 in the country, for example, and depending what your costs are, and all of a sudden, halfway through it, they prohibit them, well, you're screwed because you can't sell them. You can't make your money back. And try to re-import something into the United States, it's an absolute nightmare. Like getting stuff, it's one thing getting out of the U.S., so they'll probably come directly from Slovakia if we get any. But we want to make sure that the American version actually goes through and everything else. Then we'll consider getting one up here. It's a long process getting the firearm approved for the Canadian market. And then some of them, there is no actual rules. For example, the VZ, right? That one, was it Type 81? First one was approved, but the second one's because it had the Molin Abe logo on it. Oh, they declared it prohibited just because of a marking on the stock. So you really want to dot all your I's and cross all your T's before you try bringing a new firearm into the Canadian market, because it could turn around and bite you if you forget something or you overlook something. So you really want to make sure that if you bring a product in, that it's not going to turn around and bite you later.
Yep.
But it looks cool. If we do get them, I'd definitely pick one up. I might get an employee discount. Yeah. So you never
know what the plan is for barrel length? Like, are they going to bring in a non-restricted version of it?
It will be non-restricted. We're not going to bring in a restricted variant. There's no point. People want... a rifle that they can hunt with. We've already got lots of ARs and restricted rifles up here. People like something that they can do three gun with, and they can also hunt with at the same time. So that would be the target market.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Because you have to figure people that have restricted 223s or bolt or carbines, they're three gunners, right? And that's a limited market compared to, say, if you can get a lot of hunters can have a short barrel carbine, 18 and a half inch, something nice and small. You're going to sell a lot more if you can retail them to the hunters than you can the competition shooters.
Yeah.
But if you can tap both markets, it's even better.
I can understand how that why that makes sense, yeah.
And then I'd have to talk the wife into getting another rifle. So that'll be
It's for the business.
Yeah, but it still comes out of my pocket.
For the business. You're not getting a new rifle.
Wait till you win it next year.
No, I can't wait. That reminds me, I got to call a gunsmith to see if my BL-22 is ready. The trigger drop should be ready by now. I want to play with that.
My main topic this week is because for whatever reason I decided I need a single stack 9mm. And why would I need a single stack 9mm? Because my Jericho right now in its holster on my hip is just too far out there and it's not very concealable. So if the laws change tomorrow and the law being concealed carry was legal, what would you go with? And I'm not going to go with like short barrel stuff because like what a lot of people I'm listening to in the States talk about is they like the longer slide, but the shorter handle. So like,
Well, you know, Ben, if you lost some weight, it wouldn't stick out so far and it would be a problem.
Wow. This just got
makes
savage.
It easier to hide firearms, Thomas. Yeah.
Just lift up a roll and tuck her in.
Exactly.
I've got the opposite problem. It would stick out like a sore thumb because I'm a board.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, well, I wouldn't mind getting a nice single stack 9mm. What's out there in Canada like that? So I started looking around, and pretty much you're stuck with
1911
with a long barrel. Because like I said, I'm looking for something with a longer barrel, so you're stuck with 1911. So if I were to do this, I'd do it obviously on the cheap because I'm not made of gold. And so I'm looking, I would go with a Noriko 9mm. With a 5-inch barrel.
You're just going to copy Frosty and Trevor. Blanking on their names right now. thing to buy the NP29 or whatever it is.
Once you get the Commander with the 4-inch barrel.
If you think about it, though, like, think about it. You're generally, like, if you're going to tinker with your gun, if you're going to buy a cheaper 1911, you're going to end up tinkering with it. And from what I understand, the stuff coming out of China is no, like, the physical material you're dealing with is no worse than the stuff you're getting from the States. So if you're going to end up polishing up the pieces and fitting it yourself, then why not spend $400 less than you would otherwise?
Oh, I agree. I bought 1911 just for that purpose, just to play gunsmith with. I haven't touched it yet, but that's why I bought it.
So that's pretty much where I would go. Also because, like I said, barrel length being you want something longer rather than shorter. You know, we don't really have access. No one's bringing up the MMP9 shield with a longer barrel to Canada. So
let's do it this way. It's a fantasy that we can conceal carry. So let's just pretend that we live in a free country and barrel length isn't an issue. Because it wasn't until C-68. So if you had your choice for two guns, one for concealed carry and one for open carry with no restrictions, no Canadian restrictions, your decision be based on that criteria?
That's a good question.
Because we can carry in the States if we've got our permits. We can't carry up here, but we have a far greater possibility of being able to carry in the States. So, right, that's what my choice is going to be based on, is what I can carry south of the border.
So I think I'd still go with a single stack because of the concealability, right? You are going to lose some of your capacity, but apparently reloads in situations where people have to pull their firearm, reloads for the civilians anyways, are very unlikely. As much as you should carry more ammo and everything, the amount of times that people have needed to reload in these encounters apparently are very, very rare. And I forget who I was listening to. I think it was with Modern Self-Protection. He was interviewing someone about this. And the guy, basically, all he does is he watches hundreds of videos of these kind of encounters where people have to use their either police officers or civilians have to use their personal firearm to defend themselves and don't end up reloading. Like they use what's in their gun and that's it. So I don't know. Like that wouldn't stop me from carrying an extra 2-3 mags. And being single stack, they're easy to hide. So that wouldn't really concern me. And I wouldn't mind the lesser capacity, but being able to walk around safely with it, but being able to deploy it appropriately I feel like I could do that with a well-maintained 1911.
Yeah. The downside to any any gun really that you get with a 5-inch barrel is most manufacturers are not making long slide short grips, which is essentially what a lot of people seem to be, you know, wanting to do or modifying their gun to essentially make a long slide short grip. So if you were to pick out a 1911 5-inch, it might have the same size grip as a 4.25, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the grip is any better.
Well, no, you can get a commander size, and there are companies that do make the smaller grips, but the problem with a 1911, especially if it's a 45, is a round reduction. But you can, if you put thinner grips on it and you go for a commander, like a 4.25-inch barrel, a 1911 is concealable. But you want the thin grips on it. You don't want the extended safeties.
But I mean,
and you just want the sluice.
The grip frame itself is still just as long, correct? Like, did that make sense?
The frame itself, yes, is just as long normally. It's just the actual, the grip itself is shorter. You can get, because Kimber makes 3.5-inch barreled 1911s with really short grips.
Right.
Yeah, but my point is that no one's making a short grip with a 4.25 or 5-inch barrel.
No, no. Usually the whole thing's reduced, not just the slide length.
Yeah.
Well, how big is the smallest P320 frame?
No idea.
See, that's the biggest difference, I think, right there. I think they are the only ones that are kind of making. They have a compact. Yeah. They do make a compact version of it, or maybe even all the way down to subcompact. I'm not sure.
They're looking at budget too. If you start going for those Kimbers, you're talking again. It's a few grand up here.
Yeah, it's because you're paying for the name, right?
Well, you're paying for the workmanship too. The Kimbers are a well-made gun.
Didn't you have a Kimber that you hated?
No, I love my Kimber. I got a Kimber Gold Match.
I think I remember you complaining about that once.
No, that was my STI Spartan I was complaining about. My Gold Match has never failed, ever.
Okay.
And it's a tack driver, and the workmanship's just flawless on it. It'll shoot under a 0.5-inch all day long. Even tighter. With my eyes are better. I can keep them all in the tendering with that gun if I take my time. It's a tack driver, but it costs a lot of money.
So the P320 has a nitro subcompact, so it looks like it's a, it's got like an inch or two past the trigger guard. And then it's, you know, that's it. So they do have a small frame.
What about open carry? If you had your choice of open carry, what would you take where concealability wasn't an issue, Benny?
I don't think I would need to. Something like that, like if I was in a duty position, I would carry what works. So I'm used to the Jericho. I have a Jericho. I'm trained on it. I have the mags for it. I don't see a reason to change, right?
Yeah. No, I don't blame it. Jericho would be good.
So, honestly, in that position, maybe don't go with a race gun, but, you know, that's personal preference at that point. You know, as much as I'd love to say, oh, I need a new gun, but, what I have works, and you know, it's good to train with it. So what, Mike, what would you carry?
Well, if I could conceal carry, I'd probably carry something like my P239, which is the 9mm single stack, 8-round mag, double action, single action. And it's kind of already set up to be a concealed carry gun. Like it has I wouldn't call it a bobbed hammer, but it's a reduced, I guess you'd call it the tang on it has been like drastically cut down. Like it's essentially already designed to be a concealed carry gun. So I would probably carry something like that. But actually to side with that, I actually heard somewhere, I was listening to a podcast, watching a YouTube video. And one big point that they made, because we live in Canada, land of the cold, is if you're ever encountered in a situation outside, which is probably odds are you're outside, in the winter, where are your hands going to be? your hands are probably inside your pockets because they're cold. Right. And the point that they made was carry a revolver in your pocket. So I would also, I would probably dual carry something like that on like my belt, and I would consider carrying something like a Ruger LCR or like an like a Smith & Wesson J-frame with the internal hammer inside my jacket, so that when, once again, it's freezing cold and I'm walking into work from the parking lot or something like that, I have something available right there.
Yeah, that's definitely, and not to sound too much of a fanboy here, but I think, I'm pretty sure it's the guy from Modern Self-Protection. He carries a pocket gun, and then he has either on his hip his concealed carry, or in a bag nearby his the rest of his rig or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's not something I would have thought of, but definitely a very viable option.
Yeah.
You said, and that's the P239. You said is what you would carry
as a hip gun. Yeah. As the main gun. Yeah. As a side gun, I'd probably end up carrying something like a Ruger LCR. And I'd carry that in like a jacket pocket. So like I said, hands are in my jacket when I'm walking because it's cold out. Uh-huh. And you need a revolver in a situation like that, because you take one shot with a semi in your pocket, your slide's going to gum up with all the parts of your jacket that you just blew off, where the revolver won't gum up with that, especially if you get one that has no hammer.
Right. Or an internal hammer.
Or yeah, an internal hammer. So.
Sorry, I'm still stuck on the P30.
P239.
Is that
what's a SIG? That's a SIG, yep.
So, like, what, you have, like, a Canadian barrel on that? Cause...
Nope, if you buy the, and I don't think they offer it anymore. I'm not 100% sure on this. I've looked it up. If you go onto the SIG website, it's not on there, but they had a model at one point that was called the TACOPS model. So it came with a threaded barrel, and that threaded barrel made it, like, exactly the exact millimeter distance or length that you need it to be legal in Canada.
Uh-huh.
Now, what about open carry, Mike?
I don't know. I'd probably go with Old Reliable P226. But with that said, there are so many other... 100? Pardon me?
Your GP100?
You know what? I love that gun, but I don't know if I'd ever conceal carry it. Like, it is, when I shoot a match.
Open carry. We're talking open carry, though.
Oh, yeah, I know. But I mean, at a match, that gun is heavy. Like, that revolver is heavy on your hip. And it's only 4.25, right? I can't imagine anyone going anything larger than that. No, I'd probably carry something like that. I haven't shot my PPQ enough. But if I shot it for a year or two and I put 1,000 rounds through it with no problems, I would consider that gun, because that is also a very comfortable gun to shoot. And one nice thing about the PPQ is that, or at least the Q5 match one that I have, there's pretty much no modifications I want to do to that gun. I could leave it completely bone stock, which to me is a giant... It's a giant plus when you can leave your gun completely stock and still have it be... It's what I'll call carry ready, as opposed to other guns where you might say, oh, well, the M&P trigger is too squishy, I'd want to replace the trigger. Well, if you did end up in front of a judge, you might have to justify why you changed that trigger out. But if you buy a gun that's pretty much ready bone stock, then, you know what I mean? Then you justify the gun. You don't have to justify the parts inside of it. Why you put that Go Fast muffler on it.
Go Fast muffler.
Well, it's not necessarily the judge, it's the prosecutor that will go after you if you find out that you've done any modifications. Even if you use hand loads, because somehow they think it's more deadlier if you hand load or if you light the trigger. So,
yeah, exactly. So that's why I say something that's completely bone stock. Because I have done work on that P226. I don't think I've ever done any trigger work, but I've changed out springs on it, right, to make the trigger pull lighter. And I'm no lawyer, and I don't live in the States, and I don't actually have to deal with this stuff, but I've heard that even something like that, you might have to justify one day, why did you lighten the trigger? Did you lighten it so it'd be easier and quicker to kill the guy, right? Not to defend yourself, but...
Right. I don't know if that's ever been taken to court. That's always something that people are worried about.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it has gone to court. Mesad Ayub, Mesad, actually will go to court and to testify if you... was it the civilian defense? There's some type of program that he will go there, and he's actually he's been called to court hundreds and hundreds of times as an expert witness, and that has come up. People using hand loads, people using hollow points, people doing modifications to the trigger, like why do you need a 2.5 pound trigger? And it does come up. You get an aggressive prosecutor. They can switch the tables, and you know, even though they're the victim, they switch the tables so it looks like you were the perpetrator because did modifications to make your gun more deadlier.
Yeah, you went out quote unquote hunting for this bad guy.
I would definitely suggest if anyone is listening to this who does do concealed carry, use factory loads.
Yeah.
Don't use hand loads. A, the reliability issue, and B, the idea of, you know, over penetration or whatever. I don't remember the exact reason for it, because I remember someone talking about this, but if it ever falls into question, the ammo you used acted not like it was supposed to. Apparently these manufacturers have to keep bits and pieces of their ammo. Batches of their ammo, like parts of their batches, on file for future reference or whatever. So, it's definitely a better idea to use factory ammo for self-defense rather than hand.
Yeah, and get the best factory self-defense ammunition that you can get.
Don't cheap on it.
Don't cheap on it.
Yeah.
And you should also, I just looked it up, it's the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Fund. And
that's what it is.
Yeah. And I would also say, if you're going to conceal carry, get something like that, so that if you do end up in front of court, you have Masada Ayoub backing you up.
Plus, you get all kinds of educational instruction material, so you learn. And if you are in the States and you are going to conceal carry, I would definitely take a MAG 40 course. Because you've got legal responsibilities. Like, if something happens, your life is going to be changed forever. So at least know the proper steps that you have to take.
It's a worthwhile investment.
Yeah. Now, a lot of us have taken it. I haven't taken it, but Brian Bolivar's taken it. Trevor Furlot took it.
Yeah. And there is I'm trying to remember who it is. It's a Canadian person. And he did a course similar to Masada Ayoub.
Dave from Quebec.
Yeah, right? He's from Quebec. Yeah, what's his...
yeah,
Slam Dave from Quebec. Talks... That's, pardon me?
Dan Slamfire always talks about him. Where they tried to get a course with him, but it didn't pan out so well.
Yeah. Sarah and I actually tried to get a course with him this year, but I guess his course in Ottawa, he couldn't get enough people, so it got canceled.
I think from Rick from Fire Art Solution actually has a similar course. Because both him and Jessica have taken Mad 40 kit classes, and they've done a lot of training.
Yeah, their urban course, whatever that is. That's their version of it.
Yeah. And they're both excellent instructors. When one's not babysitting.
Yep. Man, I can't remember what this guy's name is. It's starting to bug me.
Isn't that the guy from Craft or Cram?
No, I don't think so. Man, this...
Well, we'll come back to it. Oh, now he's going to look it up.
Oh yeah, I'm trying to figure it out right now. But what do I have to go off of? Gun Courses Canada. You know how many hits you get when you put that into Google?
Zero.
Yeah, exactly zero.
Well, you put to type in the word gun, and the first thing you get is Crazy Wendy's website.
Oh, is it? I don't know.
Urban Dynamics. There we go. Pistol/ Urban Dynamics training.
But that's not the.
That's Fast's course.
Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't had Rick on the show for a long time. We should get in touch with Rick.
Yeah.
So you want to know my choices?
I guess we have to.
Yeah. I agree with Mike on the pocket carry. I would definitely have something in my pocket, small, with a revolver with an internal hammer. Pants pocket, preferably, because I usually won't have my hands in my coat pocket. They'd be my pants pocket. And I guess my physique, I could get away with something a little bit bigger. I would go for a full frame, 4.5 inch quarter. I'd go for a Grand Power Q100. I'd want 17 rounds. I'd want the extra capacity. The shorter slide, and with the thinner grips, I can put a smaller profile on the gun. So it doesn't have, like, normally for mine, I have the big grip. But if I was going to do concealed carry, I can actually make the grip thinner with the smaller back strap. And with a 4.5, 4.25 inch it's easier to conceal. And I'd like to have the 17 rounds because, you know, because I can. And I would have a backup magazine. Now, my open carry is totally different from you guys. The only time I wouldn't open carry in an urban environment, I would always have it concealed unless my options were it had to be open carry, like it was a tombstone or something where you have to open carry. But I would always have it concealed. The only time I would want something for open carry if I was in the bush, and I'm thinking more for the two-legged and four-legged predators, I would go for, and you guys can hate me, but I would carry a Desert Eagle 44 Magnum because I would carry it for self-defense for big critters.
Would you get it with the tiger stripes?
No, I'd want something black with black sights.
Are you sure you don't need, I thought you needed white dot sights now. You're getting too old.
Well, okay. I might go for the fiber optics. No, but I want something for takedown power. Like I thought, I still have the concealed carry. You know, I would still have both. I'd have a backup. But the only time I would actually open carry would be in the wilderness. And then I want something big and powerful because I want to be able to take down, you know, not only wasps, but I want to be able to take down a bear. And sorry, 9mm is just not going to do it. I want something with some stopping power that's controllable. You know, I could say a Model 29 and 44 Magnum, but to me, they're not fun to shoot. I've had several Model 29s. I develop a flinch with them. Even though they're beautiful guns and they're well made, I can't get an accurate shot off fast enough. I'd rather have an autoloader with lots of stopping power. So I go for a 44 Desert Eagle if I was open carrying in the bush, because I can, and it's my fantasy.
Your fantasy involves open carrying in the bush?
Well, no, but say if I was doing with my clothes on, like we can get wilderness carry permits here. And if I had a wilderness carry permit, I would get a 44 Magnum. And if I had my choice of 44 Magnums, I would get a Desert Eagle over a revolver, just for if I have to get something fast out on target and get a shot off with worrying about flinching, I would just prefer something like that. If I couldn't afford a Desert Eagle, then sure, I'd get a Model 29. But I'd want the biggest. I don't want a 460 or 500. They're nasty.
Well, what about a 454? That's less than 460.
You ever fired?
I have actually fired a full power 454 Casull.
They're not bad if it's got a muzzle brake and you're actually shooting it. It wasn't too bad. Standing beside it, it's nasty. But the 500 is just. It's a 50 caliber hand cannon. No, but the 44 and an autoloader, I could put off a lot of shots really quickly and then reload.
By the way, I finally figured out who it was because I asked Sarah. Caps. That's who it is. Yeah. Dave Young.
Okay.
He's the one who does he does like a legal course.
Well, I have friends with him on Facebook, I think.
You're friends with everyone on Facebook.
Not everyone yet.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but that'd be my choice because my open carry isn't going to be in the city. It's going to be something that's in the bush where I want something that I have to draw quickly, get a few shots off. I'd want a 44 Magnum.
Well, I went with the assumption that for whatever reason, Canada decided, oh, we're going to make open carry legal, but conceal carry still illegal because that would be too dangerous. And that's why we're picking our open carry gun.
I think what a good way of phrasing it would be is, what can we own at home but take south of the border with our concealed carry permits?
That's a good way of putting it. I like that. My answers are all the same, minus I can't carry an LCR. Or I can't get an LCR here.
That's it.
Yeah.
And I can't bring short-barreled rifles down the state, too.
But they're all pistols, so we're all good.
I'm not going to consider an AR pistol.
I have to measure it. I still haven't done it yet, even though I think I mentioned on the show a long time ago. I'm pretty sure our Tavor is not legal in some states.
How so?
Even though it's got 18.5-inch barrel. Because I know Maryland has, I think it's a 29-inch overall barrel, overall length requirement.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And the Tavor comes in under that by like a quarter of an inch or something.
Yeah,
even if I like pinned the muzzle brake.
Oh wow, I didn't realize they had that rule.
Yeah.
Well, we have the same rule, overall length.
But ours is like 26 inches.
Yeah. So you just need that those 8 extra inches off your barrel, and then you're covered.
I was looking at a Desert Eagle 44 Magnum. I don't think the wife would go for it. That's a little too much.
I thought you were going to go with a 460 Roland.
You know, you want the 460 Roland. You can shoot 45 Colt in it very comfortably.
But you should buy a 460 Roland. You know you want to buy one.
You know who I know someone
460 who has a 460. For a 460. Yes, I know. I'm still thinking about it.
I like being a bad influence on people.
Doesn't Ken have a Glock in 460 Roland?
I think you can get a conversion unit for a 460 to a Glock too.
Yeah, I know he was building it. I didn't know if he actually finished it or not.
I believe he shot it once and then something went wrong. Not catastrophic, but like sights went flying.
Okay. I like what you're talking. Yeah, he was building it. Glockzilla, he was calling it?
Yeah. Yeah,
Glockzilla.
Yeah, then he went to gunsmithing school and his budget got all priorities changed.
Yeah. Thomas, what's the first event?
Come make a difference. Niagara Region Chapter Delta Waterfowl Dinner on Friday, December 1st at the Antipasta de Roma, 87 Hanover Drive, St. Catharines, Ontario. Doors open at 5:30. Dinner's at 7. Casual camo attire is encouraged. Contact Gregory Sarskin at 905-328-1730. We also have the email links in the show. I'm going to be there. So if you're around, drop in. There's apparently 4 guns in the prize tables and raffles and everything else. I don't care about the raffles or any of that stuff. I just want to win a gun.
My dad bought, I think he got membership with them because they were giving out hats with their membership at the Toronto show 2 years ago, sportsman show. And he liked the logo, so he bought the hat.
Is Stan coming?
What, to the dinner?
To the dinner?
No. It's Friday night, so.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's, yeah, it sucks.
We'll be at home. But no, they've got a cool logo, everybody. So, you know.
Support them, if nothing else, for that.
He's got that beige hat. I remember. Yeah, he does have that hat, doesn't he?
Yeah. Event number 2, new CSA gun draw. This one I actually wouldn't mind winning, but I don't have money for raffles. Czech Small Arms VZ58. All you have to do is make a $20 donation to the CSSA, and we'll give you a free chance to win this gun. Better yet, they'll give you 3 chances with a $50 donation, and a $100 donation will get you 10 chances.
How can it be a free chance if you have to donate $20?
Because that way you can say that you're not paying for the raffle ticket.
Yeah, you're not buying a ticket. You're just making a donation.
Oh, okay.
And that's probably how they get around lottery laws.
The rifle will find a new home December 1st, 2017, just in time for Christmas. So if anyone wants to donate in my name, that'd be great. PM me for my information.
CA.
I would have, but I already put my donation in under my name, so sorry, buddy.
Please send your donation by mail to VZ58 CO CSSA 204-1143 Wentworth Street, West Oshawa, Ontario. L1J8P7, call free at, and then the rest of the links in the show notes.
Yeah. Or just on your phone or your computer, whatever you're listening to this on, just go to the website that's in the show notes.
Yes.
And it will take you right to the donation page for that because I even had trouble trying to find it.
Actually, you know what? I actually got to go into Oshawa 2 days this week, so maybe I'll buy a ticket.
Oh, great. Oh, there I you forgot go. To mention. You heard it. Everyone quit. Thomas bought a ticket.
I'm gonna buy a ticket.
I forgot to mention, I got my my official certificate for completing the train the trainer club level safety or the club level safety course and the range safety officer course. So that came in this week.
So you did take the club level safety, like you can teach the club level safety course.
Yeah, I can teach the club level safety course now, and I'm a CSA certified range of safety officer.
Oh, okay. So I couldn't figure out why you took train the trainer if you didn't take the club instructor course. So you did take it. Okay.
Yeah, I did. That is train the trainer. So I think.
I didn't get a certificate for train the trainer. I just got it for the safety course. I want a certificate. I paid a lot of money for that.
Maybe you failed and they just didn't want to tell you.
Hang on. Nope, doesn't say. That's a nice thing I like about the CSA. When you take the course, you actually get a certificate so you can put up your wall and impress your friends and neighbors. Or in my case, my wife makes you hide them in the bedroom so nobody sees them. But it's nice getting the certificate.
It's not like the good china. You don't want to put it out on display.
Hmm. Does Sarah let you put any of your trophies or stuff out?
Define out.
In the living room.
I don't try.
Yeah, everything's in my bedroom.
Put it this way. I did try.
I actually had one of my trophies up on the mantle, two of my trophies in the mantle, and it was I got sick and tired of hearing about it. It clashed with the decor.
I've had different trophies on the mantle. But
well, they let us put them up there for a couple of weeks, and then they'll say, are you finished with that? You're going to put it away now? They will give us a little bit of glory, let us put it up there for a couple of weeks. Then we're told we have to take it down.
No.
My trophies from the charity shoe are hanging up over my rear loading bench.
Yeah. Mine are all in the office, so I get to look at them while I podcast.
Yeah. Well, actually, my bedroom / office. Yeah. The only thing I got to watch is I got a sword that I have as a trophy, and I had it laying over my bed for the longest time. Then I realized one night, if that nail ever slips in my sleep, I'm dead. So I moved the sword. It was really cool. I went to this PPC match, probably 10, 11 years ago. And I came in third. So the first place sword, it was awesome. It was beautiful. The second place was really, really nice. I got third place. So it was almost like a Robin Hood sword. I got the bottom end sword, but it still looks pretty cool.
That's kind of weird to me that they give away a sword at a shooting contest.
The guy that was sponsoring the match at the time, actually at that time, his business was importing swords.
Okay, so you got then that makes sense.
Yeah. So if you got first place, you got like this $300 sword. Second place, you got a $200 sword. And third place, you got the $100 sword. So I get the $100 sword. But it's still really cool. Like, I didn't expect it. You know, so I got my little trophy and I got the sword. I go, this is cool. But of course, I was never allowed to put that one in the living room. That's always had to stay in here.
Yeah.
Listener email from James. Hi, guys. Just listened to episode 159, and Mike was looking into an all-purpose rifle caliber for hunting. May I suggest your look into the 6.5 Creedmoor, groundhogs to moose with Hornady rounds and PRS possibilities too. Pick your rifle manufacturer and check out their offerings. I can't wait to get one. Lean towards a semi personally, but I may fall short on savings and buy a bolt. Great show, and keep those barrels pointed downrange and smoking.
Thanks, James.
Thank you.
Thank you, James. Anything to say, Mike?
Well, I'll get to that in the shout-out section.
Okay. Please send any feedback, questions, or comments you may have to host@newshootercanada.ca. our Facebook page, or in the comment section of our website at newshootercanada.ca. Stitchers, iTunes, as of now, doesn't look like we have anything new. Facebook likes, as of now, we have 1,252. Closing comments, Thomas?
We were talking about this pre-show, some of the video bloggers. I guess, Benny, you saw that, what do you call that, round table
so with all the bloggers. Yeah, I started watching the round. Well, actually, what happened was I watched one of the bloggers' responses to it, like the guy who was on the round table responding to someone else's response to it, and then I started watching the actual round table. So yeah, go ahead, speak your mind, and then I'll comment on it from what I understand.
No, I was just saying, like, what was it, Yankee Marshall? He went ballistic. On a lot of the guys that actually have YouTube channels and do reviews and stuff. And then he ranted on about the NRA and how they don't really do anything to gun owners. It's all industry, and they haven't done anything since the 70s for the gun owners. And he's all bent out of shape that they agreed, they wanted the ATF to do the ruling on the bump stocks. Okay, I can understand his point about the bloggers, but his stuff with the NRA isn't correct. They've been involved in a lot of the court decisions, a lot of the challenges over the years. They do have a lot of industry support, because it's same up here. When you go to checkout, you check out your CSSA donation, check out your CCFR donation. In the States, they have, when you're buying something, check out your NRA donation. So, you know, saying they haven't, the NRA hasn't done anything to get for gun owners is a crock. They've been very involved in a lot of legislation, a lot of court challenges. So I think he was just kind of venting that he didn't like the response to the bump stock. And I could see his view on some of the shows. Like, if somebody is getting paid to review a product, that's fine. But a lot of these guys don't. A lot of these guys go out and they either they'll ask for the manufacturers to submit a sample to them. This manufacturer goes, here it is. You've got 60 days. By the way, give me a credit card number, because at the end of 60 days, if you don't return it to us, you pay for it. But a lot of the times where he goes out and he buys all his own guns. So, you know, I can see him, you know, he's criticizing all his people, but at the same time, he's got Patreon accounts. So he still has people donating to his show and on top of it. And it's just, you know, he's like the internet gun expert that actually doesn't do any shooting. I don't think any of his videos, he's actually ever gone to the range and fired a gun. He's always telling people what they should do, but you don't actually see him shooting any products himself. He's criticizing, you know, how you should do your grip, because he doesn't like it when you do it the other way. And then he got into a pissing match with Bald and Curious, who actually, I like Bald and Curious's videos. You know, the Yankees saying, oh, well, revolver and autoloader, you know, there's not a difference. You can reload a revolver just as fast as an autoloader. You're more or less called BS on Bald and Curious. And we all know it's not true. Anybody that shoots competition.
Have you ever seen Jerry Mitchell reload a revolver?
Well, that was my next point.
Okay.
You know, you can be, if you, 99% of us are not going to be proficient like Jerry Mitchell. You know, if you go out there and you practice and practice and practice and you're a competition shooter, I'm sure if you've got the skill and the dedication to do it, you can probably get your reloads down to on par with the semi-auto if you really work on it. The average shooter, no. Like, I'm not going to be, you know, I've shot for years. I'm pretty fast with reload. I'm definitely faster with my semi. Same with you, Mike. You shoot I-Corps. Would you reload faster? What can you get rounds off from your gun empty to full? What can you do faster?
To be honest, I've never timed it. I would be very interested to time it and see how fast I could do it.
So, okay, maybe try it one maybe. Time. So you take
notes. Things to do before next week's show.
You got a timer. You can do it.
Yeah, so I was going to say, this flashy new
with
timer.
With your cylinder full of brass, okay?
Yeah.
Knock out those brass, put in another round, close the cylinder, and just get off one shot. It's just the actual reload that you want to time. And compared to having your 1911 or whatever it is, open on the slide, putting a full mag in, and firing one shot.
Yeah.
But I'm saying this guy who never actually shows any shooting, that shows that he actually has any ability, telling a competition shooter that, oh, yeah, you can shoot a revolver just as fast as you can as a semi, where the average person can't. Jerry Mitchell, some of these competition shooters, yeah, of course, they practice.
Yeah.
But the average Joe, they're not going to do it. It's probably double the time, for me at least.
Yeah, but how often do you practice?
I sold my revolver 3 years ago. I don't even have a revolver now.
Yeah.
But just this armchair internet critic critiquing everybody that doesn't actually do any shooting himself, it kind of bothered me. I can understand some of his points, but
I just clicked on his
YouTube channel. How many hosts on this show went shooting this week?
Hey, after listening to Slamfire Radio for 2 years and Owen barely ever going, I think it's okay that we don't go every once in a while. Sorry, Owen. Although you probably
Owen shoots on his own property, though.
No, but he was always like busy doing one thing or other with Comfrey or something.
Yeah, he's raising his Comfrey and three daughters now, and his home, like he does a lot of, he grows all his own food. He harvests most of his own meat. You know, he's a really back to basics kind of person, and Comfrey. I miss Owen from the show. I liked Owen.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I just was going through Yankee Marshall's video, like looking at his videos he's posted on YouTube, and I'd say 1 out of 5 is a review or a positive thing. The rest of them are just, you know, him complaining about one thing or other.
Yeah.
He has one where he rants off about vets and Memorial Day and how it's a stupid holiday, and someone's comment, and I haven't watched the video, so I can't really speak on it. It sounds like he hasn't actually served, but you know, he just seems like someone who just wants to complain about everything and anything and everything. And for some reason, people decide to, you know, listen to his complaints. He has something like, I'm just scanning down. Oh, he's calling out the firearm flaw, or, you know, this person or that person, you know, like he thinks he's God's gift to humanity, telling everyone what they're doing wrong. Half his videos is the face of him with like red eyes and screaming. Like, that's okay. If that's the persona you want to pull, that's great, but not if you're trying to move forward or have a reasonable discussion, which is exactly what the round table is about. So.
Exactly. The first 15 seconds of his videos are usually funny. Like, I'm a grown ass man. Usually there's something funny in there. Then you listen to his rant. It's like, okay, and what experience do you have in this matter?
Yeah.
And I don't think it was fair. Like, you know, that they, like, I can see his point. Like, we were talking earlier, say Iraqi 88. I like his mod when he goes with the Moss Armory and we look at all the different guns and stuff and different takedown guns and different shooting. I find it very informative. I don't actually ever telling him or trying to tell me to buy this particular product. You know, if the guy's charging, all the power to him, because the Yankee, he's got Patreon accounts. He's still taking money from people. So, you know, I can see, you know, if you're sponsored by somebody and maybe you don't want to give the product a bad review, but on whole, most of them are really, really good. Like the one guy I like is Patrick E. Kelly. He takes a gun out of the box. He'll get from a manufacturer. He will take it straight to a match, run it through the match. Whether it fails or not, you get an honest review at the end of the match. And that's all he does. He doesn't talk politics. He doesn't talk what he thinks of the different groups. You get something like Patrick and he just does an honest review, or he'll do a coaching technique, or, you know, back to basics. But it's just straight shooting from an experienced shooter, and he's a gunsmith, so the guy knows what he's talking about. When you got to listen to something like the Yankee just spew his poison, it just turns me off.
Yeah, and if you just look at the list of the people on the panel, the gun panel, it was John Patton and Adam Kraut, who are both part of the Gun Collective. You have Iraqi veteran 888, who, whether they weren't part of the gun community, their status on YouTube has pushed them in that position where they are basically industry members. In fact, the whole list is either people who are industry members or people who, because of their production value and followers, have been pushed in a position where people listen to what they have to say because they've proven themselves as a sound voice, whether it's reviews or political talk. So it's really, I really don't know where he's coming from with his upsetness, except for that he just wants to, you know, he needs to tell everyone what they're doing wrong.
Yeah, so my advice is, you know, ignore him for any actual value. Just look at him for entertainment purposes. There's a lot of other blogs out there that have a lot of really good information for not only the new shooter, but the experienced shooter. Like, you know, one of them, he was trashing, who was it? It was trashing Hickok 45 because he pulls Bud's gun shop all the time. So what? Bud gives the guy guns to use. I like Hickok 45. The man can shoot. And he does a variety of different firearms. You know, whatever he can get a hold of. He gets guns that either Bud's lends him or listeners lend him. And he, you know, he does he's a nice retired teacher from Tennessee. You know, I don't watch him all the time, but I would never trash Hickok 45. I think he's a decent guy. And Steve Lee likes him. He wrote a song about him.
Yeah, no, you can't, like, that's, you can't diss for the 45.
No, he seems like a really nice guy. And, you know, he's a real down-to-earth southern boy and, you know, from Tennessee. And he can shoot, man. All power to him. I would never trash Hickok. I may not watch all his videos, But if I see he's reviewing a gun or shooting a gun that I'm interested in, I will definitely stop and look at it, see what he has to say about it.
Yeah, he definitely is one of those people who has gained a reputation as a honest gun reviewer and knows what he's talking about.
Same with 22 Plinkster. You know, he does a lot of rimfires. I like rimfires. He had an episode on a different type of scopes. And I'd never heard of the Hawk scope. And he'd had a couple of Hawk scopes that he actually bought. And because of his reviews and what I saw through the scope on the YouTube channel, he got my interest in a Hawk scope. And if it wasn't for 22 Plinkster, I wouldn't have bought a Hawk scope. You know, so there are some really good people, and he can shoot too. And he's buddies with Julie Golub, so.
Okay, Mike, you have anything to add?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
The only thing I was thinking of when you guys were talking about this was Demolition Ranch. Remember how Thomas was talking about the Gunaholics meeting?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I found that video and I put a link in that that week's show notes. And that was actually the intro to a video where he reviews a gun. I believe it's a Taurus. And the Taurus is in 22 Hornet. So a 22 oh. Hornet revolver with a 10-inch barrel.
Yeah,
and I saw him.
We were talking about open carry. If I could open carry, that is the gun I would want to open carry.
And see, that's another video I like, just for the entertainment value, because he's funny.
But he, you know, a lot of times he gets his wife content.
Yeah, and he does have proper content, and he shoots. And he, you know, he tries different things, but I don't look at his stuff for information. I look at for entertainment because he's hilarious. He gets his wife involved sometimes, and you know it's. I would never judge him because he's not trying to sell any product. He just wants to see, you know, can we blow up this? Can we blow up that? You know, I like Demolition Ranch.
Yeah, he what's called his when he did the when he got those mannequins, that was hysterical. I don't know if any of you guys have seen those where he started off with he had a thing. SOG was sending him a bunch of stuff for a while, so he was doing anything and everything he could with tomahawks. And then he had the I think it's X Products, their can launcher. He was having fun with that. And then someone sent him some, you know, bulletproof some steel plating, and he put it on one of his mannequins and he shot it with his 50 BMG. So
you send him a product and he'll destroy it. He'll absolutely destroy the product.
But he won't just blow it up. He'll work his way up.
Yeah, he'll slowly work his way up.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there are some good shows out there. Some are, like, as you said, Demolition Rants for entertainment value. He's funny. He's got a lot of good topics, a lot of different guns and stuff. I don't watch a lot of videos, but I enjoy his because he's funny. I like Plinkster because he does a lot of that. Like, before the Smith & Wesson, when he came out with Victory, he had one before anybody else. You know, but people that just spur off their opinions with no practical knowledge, and who I definitely don't see going to the range shooting, I've got no use for. So, actually, I unsubscribed to Dan Mankey after his last little rant about the NRA and all the blogs, so I don't follow him anymore.
Okay, shout outs, Thomas.
This week, nothing. I got nothing. Oh, I'm trying to talk Terry into it. Grand Power offered to pay not only my hotel, but my airfare to go to SHOT Show.
If you want, you can just give me a quick tutorial of their products. I don't mind going for them.
And Terry's still saying she doesn't want me to go. He said he'd do the hotel. He said, I might even pay for the I might even pay for the airfare too. I'm like, Terry, come on. And she doesn't want me to go.
Okay, Thomas.
She loves you too much. She'd miss you.
You only have to pay for one ticket now. Take her with.
I'm saying, come on, sweetheart. Love, I love you very much. Come on, all I have to do is like 3 days worth of food. That's all I need. We still can't afford it. Well, you know what it's like with them. Do you try to ask for money?
Well, maybe you should sell a gun, Thomas.
She said that, and I said, no. I said, and I swore.
That was the end of the conversation.
No, I'm not selling a gun. No, she said. She said, you could sell one of your grandpas. No, I'm not selling a grandpa to go work at grandpa. She wanted me to sell my Q100. No, I'm not selling it. I like it.
You could always sell your Kimber Gold Match.
I'm not selling Oh. I still have three of her guns downstairs when her license expired.
Do, do, do.
I might have a Springfield factory comp for sale. Breda Neos Inus Deluxe. And, oh yeah, the 2245 I lent to Brent, the Benny already.
I'm pretty sure selling her gun so you can go to SHOT Show will go about as well as you telling her that you're going to SHOT Show.
Well, luckily, she transferred them to me. So legally, they're my guns. So she said I can't get in.
And you will be legally dead if you sell them.
Yeah, I know. I've been hoping to win that lottery ticket. I've been hoping that somebody would buy lots of guns so I get some commissions, but that hasn't happened yet either. So, but I'm trying, Dave. I'm trying. I told him. Because he knows I'd really, there's two things. I don't really want to go. I would go. I'm not into the 3 days of partying. That's just not my thing. Like, I would go there to work, do the booth, do the display, and that's it. I don't want to go out afterwards for dinner. I don't want to go to the bars drinking, hanging out with everybody. I probably stick with Benny because he probably have one, maybe two beer. I think he's like a one beer limit, and that would be it. I'd be the guy going back to my room crashing early every night because I'm not into the whole Las Vegas and the party scene. That's not me.
No.
I'd be taking my book back to my room after and just relaxing and chilling and sneaking out for cigarettes.
Yeah, they probably have smoking rooms there.
Well, most of my friends are, but what did Brian call me? Brian Bolivar referred to me as a teetotaler, and he's absolutely correct. I am a teetotaler because I don't drink. I haven't had a drink for 30 years. So I avoid that whole scenario, not because of other people, just because of me. I don't like to be around it. And the older I get, the more I really don't like it. So you I don't get, really want to go. It gets worse.
I thought you like reached like 100% and it's like, nope, you're just stuck there. You can't get any higher.
Oh, I got a few more levels to go.
Thomas, the next time we go to the range together, bring the Springfield comp.
Oh, it's a nice gun.
Gonna make an offer for him?
Oh, no, not at all. MD would kill me. And yeah. But it looks cool and a lot of fun to shoot, so
It's nice. It's got a national match frame. It's probably made in the mid-70s. The bluing is gorgeous on it, and it's got the original factory comp. The only problem is that back then, they were too cheap to mill the slide, so the slide still sits right on the rear side sight sits right on top of the frame, right on top of the slide, I should say. So your front sight's like an inch high to compensate for it. But it's you know, a lot of people don't think. I remember Pat Harrison was saying that a comp doesn't really do you a lot of good unless you've got like really, really super powerful loads. Horse hockey, it's like shooting a 38 special. It comp makes a big difference. The slide, you can feel the slide. You can feel the slide go all the way back and all the way forward. With my 45s, it's like almost instant. Not on this thing. You can feel it cycle because it's venting so much gas out the front. And it's a pussycat to shoot.
You said it was national match. National match frame.
Yeah, it's got an M series serial number on it. The bluing's just gorgeous on it.
I'm just trying to find a picture of this thing.
It's Springfield factory comp. It was funny. They had it up for sale at Williams maybe 3-4 years ago. And I looked at it, $750. I go, wow, that's a great deal. And then it didn't sell for about a month, 2 months. I look on the internet again. It's down to $650. So I actually went by Williams Arms and I tried it. Oh, needs a trigger job because it felt funky. There was like a clunk on it. So I come home to Terry and she didn't know I'd already been up there twice and looked at it. I said, oh yeah, by the way, I said, she calls it the Bill Little gun because there's one of the guys at my range that has one of those with, he's got EOTech on it and a rail and Terry loves shooting it. So she calls the gun the Bill gun, right? I said, oh, by the way, yeah, there's a Bill gun for sale. She called up John Williams instantly and ordered it. I said, oh, by the way, I said it needs a trigger job. Because what do you mean? I said, just tell him. And of course, Williams squealed him. Oh, yeah, he's already looked at it twice. Yeah, we'll set up a trigger job. So with a trigger job, I think it was like they had to replace the sear because there was something funky with the sear. So $650 for the gun. I think it was $75 for the new sear. So.
Wow. I'm just looking at pictures. It's a nice looking gun.
Yeah, they're nice.
Is the comps fixed or it's a removable?
So my shout out is to Dave from Grandpa for making the offer. I'm trying, man. I'm trying, but I'm not having any luck with the old girl.
That was the world's longest shout out to pretty much say, yeah, no.
No. That's why we call this the Squirrel Show.
Anyways, my shout out is to Mr. Uzi. So to go along with James, he was suggesting the 6.5 Creedmoor. When I was talking to Mr. Uzi, he actually broke it down. So I said last week that I understand like the sizes of pistol calibers, but rifle calibers are still kind of a mystery to me. So Mr. Uzi actually, like, I guess you could almost say equated certain rifle calibers to certain pistols. So I could get like a mental visual, you know, how big, what the recoil, things like that would be for different rifle sizes. And so the 6.5 is great. But from my bit of research, 6.5 is great if you're planning on shooting really far. Being in Ontario, I'll never have to shoot more than, well, my current property, I won't have to shoot more than 250. But pretty much based on that, I think I'm going to go with the 308 as Mr. Uzi suggested, just because of the more availability of components for reloading. And that, and I might get, Mr. Uzi might not want me to mention him after I say that. If I get it, go for a 308, then I can get an M14 or M305 because I'm cheap.
Woohoo, M305!
And Mr. Uzi, I'm still waiting for my electric boot warmers. It's been almost a year, but I'm still waiting.
This is supposed to be the shout-out where you, like,
I'm reminding him that he promised me something that never came.
Not where you point out their shortcomings.
Well, he is short.
I don't know. What? I've never met the man. I never thought of him as short, but I've never. Then me again, either. I don't know if I've ever seen a picture of him standing. So,
no, me neither.
I think he just called you short, Mister. See, I think you.
You got to come down to Ontario and show him what.
Yeah.
What?
I know Thomas is tall, but
you have to come down and have his little girl beat the crap out of me, right?
She probably
from
would.
What I sense, she's oh yeah. Yeah, she's quite capable.
Yeah.
Okay, my shout out is to MD as usual, one for feeding me as usual, and for letting me go shooting on Tuesday, because I'm going to do those dishes. So, yeah, thanks.
And the floor.
I swept the floor on Friday.
No, I mean wash it now.
Fine, I'll mop too.
Yeah, I got a mop too. The dog ran through the house and got mud all over, and I still haven't washed the floors.
Okay, until next time, people.
Keep your barrels downrange and smoking. Take your kid shooting.
Time spent at the range is time spent with family.
It's not about the odds, it's about the stakes. Good night, everyone.
Thank you. Me. That's all, folks. I really like
22 Mag. Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you with any questions or feedback you may have, or if you just want to call shenanigans. You can contact us at host@newshootercanada.ca or through our Facebook page. The way they look, I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small, they're for sale until I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns.
Benny, okay. You're the lead host.
I was about to
Benny,
say.
No dead space, Benny.
It's comfortable. Thomas, what's the first event?
I don't know. I can't see that thing. It's so damn small.
I would have thought you put it in.
Now, I did, but when I put it on my phone, it was nice and big. But when it goes in the show notes, it's so puny. So I have to actually pull it up on my phone to see it.
I already blew it up. Stop whining.
Yeah. Scroll down.
Oh my god, that's much better. Benny, your lead host.
I know, I'm just enjoying this falling asleep silence.
How come I don't hear anything in Audacity? Oh.
Are you muted?
No, I've got to hit play. That always helps.
That's like one step below mute.
Like I'm dragging this bar. How come I don't hear it?